This is a summary of Spotting Danger Before It Spots You by bestbookbriefings.com. Spotting Danger Before It Spots You: Build Situational Awareness to Stay Safe by Gary Quisenberry. Phase 1: Understand the Threat. Chapter 1: The Basics of Predatory Behavior. Situational awareness requires more than constant vigilance. It requires being able to see yourself and others the way a predator would. Most people have trouble with this. We generally want to see the best in others, so the fact that someone could see us as a target is hard to imagine. But the unfortunate reality is that predators exist among us. Sergeant Rory Miller's book, Facing Violence: Preparing for the Unexpected, breaks predators down into two groups: resource predators and process predators. Resource predators, muggers, pickpockets, etc., look for tangible items like cash or jewelry. Process predators, rapists, murderers, etc., are more interested in the act of violence itself. Predators can have various motivations, but violent behavior is usually motivated by one of four things: money. Money factors into almost every aspect of a person's life. The lack of it can drive people to irrationality. A desperate person can do anything to fulfill their needs. Ego. This might seem less common than money, but we all have egos. People can be pushed to extremes in order to protect their self-image. Bad decisions and violent escalations can often be traced back to hurt egos. Territory. When faced with a threat within their territory, even a peaceful, law-abiding citizen has the potential for incredible violence. Humans are territorial by nature, and criminals are no exception. Emotion. From bitter spouses to mistreated employees, violence is often motivated by emotion. Emotion is incredibly powerful, and the results are often unpredictable. How predators choose their targets. The 7-second prod. Criminals also tend to divide their victims into two categories: hard targets and soft targets. Much like a bank, hard targets present visible defensive measures. Soft targets are the opposite, and as such are more likely to be targeted. Predators measure the potential risk versus reward when sizing up their prey. This process can take as little 7 seconds. In that span of time, a predator can evaluate three things. 1. Perception. The way others see us determines the way they treat us. In 1981, sociologists Betty Grayson and Morris Stein conducted a study with violent inmates and learned that not only was there a consensus on preferred targets, but their choices were not entirely determined by gender, race, or age. Instead, they were based on body language. These following traits identified certain individuals as weak: shirt, shuffling steps, exaggerated side-to-side motions when walking, head facing at a downward angle. These traits were associated with strong individuals: medium to long steps, vertically aligned body movement, a level head, and visible eyes. Our movements prove that we may view ourselves in one way, but be seen in a totally different way. 2. Risk. A predator only attacks those they feel present a minimal amount of risk. Are they walking with a group? Do they look like they would cause a scene or fight back? Are they alert and moving with purpose, or are they distracted? Someone who avoids eye contact is seen as timid. It might seem like a small thing, but anything you can do to increase the risk you pose is worth the effort. 3. Observable value. Value is subjective, but the first thing you need to understand is that predators value their personal safety above all else. They might find your car or your watch attractive, but the real value lies in what they can get away with without being harmed. That said, some things can be valuable enough for them to take the risk. If you're out and about with valuables, make sure to present visible defenses. 4. Defenses. If someone decides to take something away from you, the first thing they will consider are your visible defenses, or if you're paying attention. A study conducted by the University of North Carolina showed that most burglaries take place between 10 a.m. and 3 o'clock p.m., when families are most likely to be out. Use these factors to evaluate yourself and how likely you are to be targeted. Chapter 2. Conducting a self-assessment. 1. Who would target you? As you assess yourself, the question you need to start with is this: who would target you. Here are some statistics from a recent report by the U.S. Department of Justice. Regarding violent crimes, strangers are more likely to commit robbery, whereas homicide is often perpetrated by someone the victim already knew. 70% of strangers that commit violent crimes target males. 77% of relatives that commit violent crimes target females. We often choose to ignore alarming behaviors in others because we don't want to know the truth, especially if they are close to us. Make a list of people who might harbor ill will towards you. Are there strangers who frequently appear in random places in your life, too? What would they want? Make a list of valuable items, starting with things you leave the house with, purses, electronics, jewelry, etc. Now consider the things you consider priceless, your family, your home, etc. After all, you can only protect the things you are aware of. 3. When would they strike? Take a look at an average week for you. At what points are you most vulnerable? Is it on your commute? Or when you're walking alone for lunch? Our routines can make us potentially vulnerable. 4. Where would they strike? As you go about your day, consider the following. What are the chances of a motivated attacker being the area you are in? Do you have visible defenses in place to deter them? Base to build your situational awareness. Chapter 3. The basics of awareness. Most people think situational awareness means sitting with their backs to the wall or constantly looking over their shoulder, but it actually goes deeper than that. In their quest to become a hard target, people often go about it the wrong way, investing in firearms and self-defense training. These are all well and good, but these are reactionary elements of personal safety. Real security begins in your head. The ability to logically process what is going on around you and detect danger before it happens should be your highest priority, as it gives you time to plan and act. That's situational awareness. 1. Defining the threat perception versus reality. While it's true that we all view the world differently, reality is based on cold, hard facts, and it doesn't adapt to your point of view. Let's test this with a mental exercise. Close your eyes and picture what a terrorist looks like. Be honest, don't think about what's socially acceptable, and form it based on what you know about terrorism. What do you see? Where is this person from? What do they look like? Are they poor, perhaps unprivileged? Are they well off? No matter what image forms in your head, the author can guarantee that the reality is much more diversified. Here are a few examples of terrorists from the last 3 years. October 1, 2017. A 64-year-old white man opened fire on concert goers in Las Vegas, Nevada. October 31, 2018. A 29-year-old Middle Eastern man drove a truck into a crowd of joggers in New York City, April 3, 2018. A 38-year-old woman opened fire at YouTube's headquarters in San Bruno, California, May 7, 2019. Two teenage students, one of which was transgender, opened fire in the STEM school of Douglas County, Colorado. There is no template for danger. It can come from anywhere, at any time, from anyone. It would seem then that staying inside and locking your doors would be the safest option, but this isn't necessarily true. The factors that determine your safety can be minimized when you put aside your preconceptions and focus on actions specifically. 2. The levels of awareness. Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Cooper developed a system called Cooper's Colors, which uses colors to denote the different mental states a person can undergo when confronted by a violent situation. Condition white. A person is totally relaxed and unaware of their surroundings. This condition applies for when you are asleep or in an environment you assume is totally free of threats, like your home. Condition yellow. A state of relaxed awareness. While you appear to be entirely comfortable, you are paying close attention to your surroundings. You are not paranoid, just aware enough not to be caught off guard. Condition orange. You have identified something that could be a threat and are focusing your attention on that specific person or area. The transition from yellow to orange is subtle and can happen several times a day without you being aware of it. When you drive, you're hopefully maintaining a consistent yellow level awareness. But when something on the road makes you suspicious, like a driver that looks like they're about to swerve without signaling. You notice and shift to orange level to anticipate their actions. Condition red. This state occurs once the threat has materialized, and it's time for you to act on your perception. Your body's fight, flight, or freeze response is triggered as you prepare for confrontation. Condition black. This condition is characterized by an excessive heart rate, 175 beats per minute or more, and a total loss of thinking ability. This happens when you lack the training needed to deal with an active, violent threat. For proper situational awareness, you want to be in condition yellow, casual, yet observant, allowing you to take in the most information without stressing out. This brings us to the next step. If you're in condition yellow and you spot a possible threat, you have to start planning out your response. This process is known as the OODO loop. 1. Observe. You make an observation about something in your environment. 2. Orient. You understand the norms of your environment in order to better identify a potential problem. 3. Decide. Based on the information you've gathered, you develop a plan of action. 4. Act. You start acting on it. People often say that action is faster than reaction, but really it's an anticipated action that will catch you off guard and slow your time to react. If you're aware, the OODO loop will take a total time of 1 to 3 seconds. This space of time is known as the reactionary gap and can be shortened through training and practice. 3. Understanding the reactionary gap. There's a common misconception that the time it takes for a person to make a decision is directly based on how many possible choices they have, with more choices increasing the time it takes to decide. This makes sense in theory, but in practice, learning only one way to do something can get you hurt. Having a variety of simple, straightforward ways to accomplish your goal in a scenario provides you with backups if your first action fails. 4. The what if game. What if games are a very effective way to increase situational awareness and decrease reaction times. They can be played in any environment and are most effective when you're playing with others. Whenever you're outside, note your place within your environment and ask yourself questions about how you would react in certain scenarios. Start simple and then build on it. What would you do if someone entered with a gun and started shooting? What if there was a sudden flood or a fire? Be creative. Determining the simplest, safest solution to the problem can help you mentally prepare for the unexpected. Chapter 4. The next level of awareness. 1. Comprehend the situation. The initial scan. We are creatures of habit. We live within a specific set of patterns that give us security. When something changes, it affects us on an emotional and physical level. Something is wrong. Think of these patterns as a baseline. People have their baselines, whether they are usually talkative or shy. Places have baselines, too. Airports are expected to be busy and chaotic. Situations also have baselines. You can expect a funeral to be somber and quiet. A critical factor in situational awareness is understanding what's normal and being able to spot things that go outside the baseline. Anytime you walk into a space, you need to analyze the situation. You don't have to size up potential enemies or memorize license plates. Just ask yourself, does this place have a positive or a negative feeling? 2. Identify what's important. The detailed scan. If you get a negative feeling from your initial scan, you have two options. Immediately leave the area or take a closer look at your surroundings in order to gain more information. What exactly was it that made you suspicious? Was it a specific person or an event that seemed outside the baseline? Was there a shift in the mood or attitude with a group? This is where the detailed scan comes into play, as you need to collect as much information as you can, as fast as you can, in order to make an informed response should it be necessary. Predators may not always be obvious or easy to spot, but there are certain behaviors you can keep an eye out for, like hidden hands. They may be concealing their intent to harm, or even a weapon. Unexplained presence. Does the suspicious person have a reason to be where they are? Are their actions in line with the baseline of that area? Target glancing. Predators like to keep an eye on their target, but they will attempt to avoid eye contact by constantly glancing at and away from them. Sudden change of movement. If you feel like you're being followed and you suddenly change your direction, keep an eye out for anyone who moves to match you. Inappropriate clothing. Someone who wears more clothing than is appropriate may be hiding something, impeding your movement. If someone blocks an exit or tries to back you into a corner, chances are good that they are trying to gain an advantage on you. Unsolicited conversation. Attempts at small talk are often a predator's last move before they attack. If someone you're unfamiliar with approaches, take a close look at your situation. Regardless of cultural differences, these are the common denominator for criminal behavior. Displays of just one or two may be a coincidence, but three or more abnormal behaviors is a cause for concern and a justification for action. 3. Anticipate outcomes. The core of situational awareness is in being able to set aside your own notions of what qualifies as a threat and using what you've observed in order to anticipate the actions of others. Some things can get in the way, failing to monitor the baseline. If you're not paying attention to what should be normal, it's likely that you'll miss critical information. Normalcy bias. We can be so concerned about keeping things normal that we believe things will always work as they are supposed to. This can create a problem because we can't predict what we don't believe will ever happen. This is where what-if games come in handy. Focus lock. It's possible to be so distracted that all of your attention is focused on one thing. Smartphones are the number one culprit here. 4. The role of intuition. The human brain is at its most efficient when it feels that the body is in danger. Intuition is actually a cognitive process that happens faster than we can control or perceive. These gut feelings often go unnoticed or are second-guessed because we're too busy trying to figure them out, but they are our body's way of quickly registering a threat and preparing you to act. Phase 3. Develop personal defenses. Chapter 5. What comes next? When it comes to the threat of violence, being proactive is much better than being reactive. Knowing what to look for and how to interpret it gives you more time to plan. You need to approach a violent encounter like you would any other problem. Identify the problem, determine your goals, assess the alternatives, and pick a solution. This is often easier said than done, especially when you're not used to the negative effects of being caught off guard. That's why it's important to train yourself and keep your solutions from being too complicated. Remember that the best solution is usually the simplest one. 1. Establishing a basis for action. If avoidance is no longer an option to a violent threat, and you decide to defend yourself, there are 3 things you need to consider. These will be critical if things escalate to the use of force, and you need to explain your actions to law enforcement. Means. Does the person you see as a threat actually have the ability to hurt you? Most people do, at some level, but if you are claiming that the threat was deadly, the means must be deadly. 2. Intent. You need to show that the threat wanted to harm you, and you must be able to explain how you knew. Opportunity. Intent and means are irrelevant if the threat doesn't have the opportunity to act on them. You can't preemptively act on a threat, it has to be immediate. 2. Avoidance, the safest option. Self-defense is subjective by nature, with there being no best way to defend yourself. That said, if the threat is spotted early, and there's a reasonable chance at avoidance, then removing yourself from the situation is usually the option with the highest chance of success. There are several tactics you can employ to keep yourself safe long before danger is even present. Stay away from high-risk areas. Be aware of your surroundings. Make yourself appear to be a hard target. Don't provoke people or let verbal conflicts escalate into physical ones. Another way to avoid danger is by blending into your surroundings, making you less likely to be targeted. This doesn't mean hiding in dark corners or covering your face with a newspaper. Blending in means being familiar with your surroundings and using what you know to imitate the looks and behaviors of the people around you. Wear clothing that is appropriate to the environment, activity, or customs you are in. Project confidence in your body language. Always look like you know what you're doing and where you're going. Consider your placement in a crowd or in a cafe, and be careful not to isolate yourself. Know your routes by consulting a map of the area, and don't flash your valuables. All these things help, but the most important thing you can do is to just be yourself, be polite to the people around you, and smile when appropriate. You can't go through life looking like a cold-blooded killer. Don't try to use a disguise or create a new personality. By being yourself, you act more natural and confident, and you get a better chance at observing your surroundings. 3. Escape. When faced with a violent threat, consider the following. Is there anything you can do to distract the attacker? Is there a way to block the attacker's path to you? Are there any safe spaces that you could retreat into? Are there any items nearby that you can use to create some distance between you and the attacker? These are just one of many possibilities, but remember that there's no substitute for solid awareness and planning. 4. De-escalation. The quickest way to de-escalate a bad situation is to give the attacker what they want, but keep in mind that this only works for resource predators, and even then there's no guarantee. Process predators don't care about what you can give, they're in it for the crime itself. Another way to de-escalate is through communication. Here are some things to consider. Speak calmly, but confidently. Never appear timid in the face of a predator. Keep out of hand's reach just close enough to build a rapport or react. Don't act scared. This will only encourage your attacker. Don't try to intimidate them. This will only inflame your attacker's ego. Watch the body language. Look for changes in posture or clenched fists. Empathize and show some understanding of the attacker's situation to calm them down. You may have to fake it, but if it provides you with a way to escape, do it. Listen, ask questions, and paraphrase what they say to you. Give the attacker an escape route. Cornering them will only force them to fight. 5. Confrontation. The focus of this book is on situational awareness. That said, there are situations where physical confrontation may be the only solution. The author recommends seeking instruction in martial arts. Whatever response you decide on, make sure you strike hard and fast. There's no point in pulling your pinches. Once you have enough room to disengage from your attacker, do so as quickly as possible. Chapter 6. Reinforcing your defenses. 1. Improving mindset. When it comes to violent encounters, we face two battles. The one we fight in our minds before the confrontation, and the physical fight itself. Confrontations can sometimes bring up doubt and insecurity. If we succumb to this, we can give up long before things even get physical. You have to push the negativity aside and focus on the best way to approach the situation. In times like these, your mindset will save your life. Mental toughness is not reserved for the physically tough people from all walks of life. Cultivate mental strength. It's true that some people are made mentally tough by growing up in tough situations, but it's a strength that anyone can train and develop. When it comes to surviving a violent threat, your will to live must defeat every obstacle you face. Your mindset is the only thing you have total control over. 2. Minimizing distractions. Distractions are the worst thing for situational awareness. Many things can take your focus away from what's important, such as personal issues, technological diversions, fatigue, or excessive noise. When your attention drifts, you can make poor, uninformed decisions. As such, make sure you're focused on your surroundings and your movements when you're out and about. Get a good night's sleep, sort out your personal issues, and keep your phone and headphones away from you until you're in a safe place. Keep your head up and your eyes moving around. 3. Controlling fear. In his book on combat, Army Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman wrote about something he called the universal human phobia. 95% of the human population are afraid of interpersonal human aggression, which is a higher percentage than the phobia for spiders or hurricanes. The reason for this is because it's personal. Humans have an interesting, if ineffective, way of protecting ourselves from this fear. Ever since we were young, we've created a story about who we are and what we can do. We tell ourselves this story every day, building up our self-image of a strong, courageous person who's capable of defending the innocent in a time crisis. Then it happens. Someone angrily confronts you. Your stomach knots up, and your mouth goes dry. You stammer out an apology, and when it's over, your hands shake, and you'll hate yourself for letting a stranger walk all over you. Why does this happen? That sudden aggression damaged your ego. The story you've built up your entire life was torn down in seconds, and it hurts. The threat of someone hurting your self-image can be way scarier than the threat of actual, physical harm, but there are ways to deal with this. One way is by inoculating yourself against stress. Self-defense training is a healthy, controlled way of getting used to the stress of confrontation, and it builds up your confidence and self-image in the process. Another way is through combat breathing, a specific way to breathe that can reduce your heart rate, as well as your panic and fatigue. 1. Inhale through your nose for 4 seconds. 2. Hold your breath for another 4 seconds. 3. Exhale through the mouth for a count of 4. 4. Hold for another 4 seconds. 5. Repeat. This technique has proven to be effective in calming you down, even when things are going terribly wrong. It works because it switches you out from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system. One final technique is known as compartmentalization. It's a natural coping mechanism that isolates certain events and saves them for processing at a later time so that we can focus on what needs to be done right now. When used correctly, it can help us set aside our own fear in order to help ourselves and others. It's important to remember that while it's okay to temporarily set aside your emotions in order to act, you need to eventually deal with that negativity in a healthy way. Gary Quisenberry was born in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. His patriotism led him to enlist in the United States Army, where he served as an artilleryman. Later in his career, he became a Federal Air Marshal and instructor. Gary now works as a personal defense trainer, and is the author of the Heads Up series of books. Whether you prefer to read or listen, we have something for you. Visit bestbookbriefings.com now for more summaries.